Hey there, guys. I'm Callan McAuliffe, and you're listening to the Walking Dead Talk Through on Golden Spiral Media.
That's awesome. Thank you.
The Walking Dead Talk Through, episode 87. What comes after review?
Welcome to the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm Steve.
Steve! Hey, you might know this little jingle. That's right. Our Showcase Award winner, Steve, is here with us tonight on a very special episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. So how you doing, Steve? Your second time with us. And of course, this is kind of a Two Worlds Collide episode.
It is. Cause I'm used to podcasting with Mark on Panels to Pixels. And now being on this is I'm checking off items for my podcast bucket list kind of thing. So, I'm hoping to get on a couple more, podcasts as well.
Yeah. Yeah. This is your second time. I had you on last year before Mark was became the permanent co-host. So it was going through my guest host period. But I've also had you on a couple of times on the Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Yes, and I've enjoyed those a lot.
And we'll probably have you back on in a few weeks, actually, assuming you want to do it.
Yeah. I haven't watched the shorts yet, but I need to. So.
Yeah, well, and there's a new one coming out on Thursday. So anyway, it's great to have you on tonight. And we've got a hell of a lot to talk about. So we will be covering season 9, episode 5, What Comes After. And of course, as I said, a very special episode. Although not as awe as I thought it would be. This is a teleplay by Matthew Negrete, story by Scott M. Gimple. It has been Gimpled and Matthew Negrete, and directed by Greg Nicotero. All right, so we've got a lot to cover this. We got a ton of feedback, as I figured we would. Let's get started. Steve, what did you think of What Comes After?
I gave it 9.5 out of 10. Inconsistently scared horse.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that as well. And Mark, what did you think?
Well, I gave it 9 out of 5, 10 Herschel's hallucinations with advice.
All and right. A clean shaven Herschel also.
Yeah, like season 2, sort of. Well, I love this episode, and I can simply say it by 9.8 out of 10. He's not dead. Because as I expressed last week, if Rick died, I think I would have had a problem. I wasn't coping well. This is my character, and thankfully, I don't have to worry because he is not dead. I also could give it, and I was going to get a clip for this, but I didn't get a chance. But you'll probably remember it back in season 2. You may recall Daryl calling Lori olive oil. And I couldn't help but notice that this version of Judith is rather slender. So I called it 9.8 little olive oils.
That's awesome.
And I couldn't help but say 9.8 Walking Dead, the Next Generation.
That was it.
No! Yes.
All right. Let's get to our listener ratings. First, Steve, you've got one.
Dieta rates this episode 9 out of 10 time jumps, fast forwards into the future.
And Cheryl gives it, I rate this 9.8 out of 10 wake up Rick.
Yeah, that was a very common thing said in this episode. Glynis gave it a perfect 10 out of 10, a bridge too far.
As well as Tilly gave it a perfect 10 out of 10, Angela Kangs.
And Lara gives it 8 out of 10, do X helicopter.
It's not Deus Ex.
Or Deuce.
All right. And last, and Clint didn't have too much to say, so I basically incorporated his entire feedback in the rating here. He says, 8 out of 10 sticks of dynamite. And by the way, would there be a case of dynamite laying around at a wooden bridge construction site? And then his other piece of feedback, and like I said, I just left it in here. He says, the previews of the upcoming episode have me more excited.
And this is why I marked the episode. One of the reasons why I marked the episode down is because of this box of this random box of dynamite. That is just, why is it in the third watch even today? I was like, why is that box there? Why was it left there? If it was left there, why was it there in the first place? What are they blowing up on the bridge?
Yeah.
Like Rosita, she likes to play with explosives.
It's one of those things that had me scratching my head.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like the
the Deus Ex Machina of
the Deus Ex Dynamite.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the hand of God putting
Chekhov's dynamite.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. All right, so let's move on to awesome sauce.
You want me to start here? Let's see. Cheryl. Yes. Yeah. Her awesome sauce is that Rick lives, and that did her heart good no matter what else happened.
Yeah. And thank you, Cheryl, for helping with the feedback today. We got a lot of feedback in a very short amount of time, and I could not handle it all.
That was a lot. I saw that popping up all day.
Yeah.
Glynis says, all the callbacks, Shane trying to instill Rick's anger into action, and asking after his daughter. Herschel giving him hope in front of that beautiful farm view from the barn, and Sasha rationalizing what Rick has done so far and alleviating guilt.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a little more to elaborate on some of that, but we'll continue.
She continues on saying, present Rick to past Rick in the hospital. Hey, butt munch, wake up. Similar to Glenn stating Rick's a dumbass, getting himself trapped in the tank. And she continues on saying, Rick asking the horse to take it easy when it galloped off season 1, episode 1, from the farm heading to Atlanta, and then season 9, episode 5, in front of the walkers.
Yeah, I thought that was actually very similar, the way that the horse behaved at times.
Yeah,
you know, it was... Whoa!
Yeah, he just can't get a handle on horses, I think.
That horse.
Yeah. And then she continues on saying, the don't open dead inside switcheroo from season 1 to season 9. All those dead bodies like the comic variant cover one issue number 100. I think I saw the dead bodies of Bob, Beth, Daryl, Jesus, Maggie, Carl, some Alexandrians. That was such a good scene. And I do agree with you. That is awesome.
And I actually got that further in my notes. I might as well bring it up here. They had basically all the actors that are on the show were
in the actual scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Josh McDermott was actually in there.
Right.
I think Christian Serratos was laying on his stomach.
Yep.
She had her head on there, but they had to cut away from him because he was giggling and laughing.
Yep. Yeah. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan was in there. I of course saw Lauren Cohan, Melissa McBride. I saw Norman Reedus. They had body doubles for Tyrese, Sophia, Dale, Beth and Sasha, and I guess Sonequa Martin Green, they actually, this is actually part of my info. You may have noticed that that scene, the way she came up, looked a little weird. Mm-hmm. It was because they shot her separately.
I thought it looked a little green screened. It looked like it,
she
was inserted into the shot kind of thing. But I just took that as part of the vision quest.
Yeah.
Kind of thing that he was on. So it didn't take me out of the episode to have noticed that.
It didn't take it out of the episode either. But it looked a little odd. And I read that the way it looked, the fact that it was shot at a different time made a whole lot of sense to me. But anyway, they used those body doubles. And then they also used full size dummies for Carl, Shane, Herschel, Glenn, Abraham. And there was one of the one of the dummies that actually looked like Nicotero himself. So,
I think Nicotero was actually in there.
Well, he may have been, but there was a dummy that looked like Nicotero. I know that they have one that looks like Nicotero. I've seen it as well. But yeah, pretty much everyone who's in the cast was in that scene. So,
well, and a side note to that, the actual scene was supposed to go to Glenn, but Steven Yeun didn't want to do it.
Well, and I heard go ahead.
No, he was stating that he felt he was so far from that and he looks completely different now in his own opinion. So he didn't want to really do it, so they gave that to Sonequa Martin Green.
And I had also heard that there was a scheduling issue. So I would probably think that what you said is true, but it was listed as a scheduling issue, quote unquote. But so more on that, I think, later.
So she continues on stating, "The bullet holes in that cabin Rick went into to bind his wound, those bullet holes with the light shining through, was that a callback to season 6, episode 16, when Glenn, Michonne, Rosita, and Daryl were in the Savior's van before the lineup in front of Negan?"
It may have been. I'll tell you the one that it reminded me of, though, was season 3, episode 7, when the dead come knocking or something like that. When the dead come knocking. That was the one that it reminded me of. But because I know they went to a cabin similar to that, and there was like a bunch of crazy stuff on there. It also reminded me of, and Rick wouldn't have known this one because he didn't go there, but the governor in season 4, when he went back to Crazy Town there, he had, I think that was dead weight. They went to a cabin that was similar as well and had a bunch of crazy stuff on it.
And she continues on stating, "Judith Grimes, that stern and solemn face saving those strangers with Rick's gun." We love that python. "Katana and hat. Wow, what an awesome combination of weapons. She sure is that little ass kicker." That is true. She continues on, stating, "Crackshot Rick Grimes blowing up the bridge and again saving the day. Rick being asked by those various voices while hallucinating, 'What's your wound?' Asked by voices of Morgan, Lori, Abraham, and either Beth or Lori again."
Yeah, the closed captioning on that just said "woman" on the second female voice.
Yeah, I noticed that too. So I wonder if it was someone who was subbed for
Beth, probably. Because Sarah Wayne Calise actually stated it on her Instagram that was her voice.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could tell, and you could also tell that Abraham, Michael Cudlitz, had voiced it, and of course that was Lenny James, but that I thought was from episode 1, the pilot,
it was ripped from that audio.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that it wasn't okay. I was wondering that, because it seemed a little strange that they used the voice of one living character and then at least two, maybe three dead characters asking about that.
Well, the thing is, though, Rick may think that Morgan is dead.
Possibly.
Right.
Why do you think they didn't have a Herschel? Or I guess because he has a vision of Herschel. So
yeah.
"What's your wound?" questions were from people he didn't have. Okay. I just
answered. Well, for that matter, why didn't they use Carl for that?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, but All right. Is that all for Glynis?
No, she adds another thing. The space junk song playing when the chopper departed, as same as it did in season one, episode one, when Rick escaped up and into the tank with Glenn asking him if he was cozy in there.
Yeah.
And of course, calling him a dumbass. And that was Space Junk is done by Wang Chung. And it just threw me back to that era of when we first saw that season and gave me chills.
Everybody have fun tonight.
Wang Chung.
Everybody tonight. Wang Chung tonight. Which always made me say, what's a Wang Chung?
That's the name of the band.
I know. All right. Deanna's next. She says, and Mark got a big long thing of awesome sauce, and Deanna just has the one. Rick's epic last scene shooting the dynamite on the bridge to stop the walkers.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a lot of people's. We've already heard it once before.
I found him. I love that. I found
him. I was a little confused by that line, even the third time I watched it just before we started recording. Is he saying that he's found his family? That he's found? I was confused about that. What do you think that the whole "I found him"?
Yeah, I think that the family is basically it's not just like Judith and Michonne. It's the whole
everyone,
like everyone.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Makes sense. All right, Laura's got a couple. The on-point acting, Lauren Cohan was so believably broken in this episode, and Andy Lincoln killed it in Sheriff Grimes' final episode, or so they say. I loved Shane and Rick's dream sequence, or as I called it, Rick's chat with the devil on one shoulder, and got weepy during Herschel and Rick's dream sequence, or as I called it, Rick's chat with the angel on his other shoulder. Maggie Michonne's scene and Maggie and Negan's scenes were powerful. For the first time since the last season's finale, I was glad Negan wasn't dead, because we got to see the broken shell of a person that Maggie saw, which seemed to adequately give her the justice she was seeking. And I have to agree with Laura on both of these. Lauren Cohan, I've got it later in my notes as well. I think that's that moment between Maggie and Michonne, where Michonne utters the line that's the title of the episode, where she says, "Can you handle what comes? Are you able to handle what comes after?" But Maggie basically says, I have to handle it because I can't handle the living now."
Yeah,
with it. So I really like that scene as well, and I've got more down in weak sauce for.
Yeah. Well, we'll go straight to you, Steve. What do you have for your awesome sauce?
So my awesome sauce is Rick pulling himself off the rebar. I thought that was an awesome scene, and I was willing to suspend my disbelief for that scene, for him doing it in the way he did it, even though this was a very specific thing that I at the end of the last episode, when it ended, I said to myself, if he pulls himself off that rebar, it's going to take me out of the scene, because I can't believe that he'd be able to do that he'd be able to pull himself off the rebar, keep himself from bleeding out, and just do that. And so it was awesome for that twist to happen in me, to where it was such an awesome way of him taking the belt off and looping it around the other rebar and then pulling himself up, and just the anguish you could see on his face. I was willing to, at least for that scene, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief that was an impossible thing to do, even for a badass like Rick Grimes.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about whether or not it was impossible or not, but when you say that, it did seem kind of impossible.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I kept this whole week, as I was waiting for the show to come on Sunday night, I kept thinking of ways that, because of the placement of the wound. And if you heard Andy's interview with Yvette Nicole Brown, he made a point to say that he wanted the wound to be very close to where he was shot in that first episode. And so I was trying to rationalize in my brain, well, if the rebar went through the same channel as the bullet went through that hit him, maybe it wouldn't hurt any organs and he'd be able to, but it really still was just an awesome scene, and Andy Lincoln pulled it off so well that I was able to suspend my disbelief for that. And then I've got Rick's visions, and my thoughts of Rick's visions are a little different than what our listeners had. I loved Shane joking around with him, that seeing that fact and that reminder that they were brothers. They were as close as I have been with any of my active duty partners that I had in my military career. Whether we were, I was never police or anything like that, but we would do sweeps of areas, and you just got to the point where you knew somebody so well, you knew how to do certain things, and it was so good to see that, see them together like that. And then
I thought so too. I actually thought so too. And, you know, I loved how he ribbed him for, you know, all, that's my family.
Yeah, she's got my eyes, but she doesn't have your nose.
I love that he said that she doesn't have, thank God she doesn't have my ears. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know how many podcasts, I know Walking Dead cast did, certainly, Watching Dead. Many, many podcasts in the first couple of seasons made fun of John Bernthal's ears. And I would look at him saying, they don't look that big to me. Of course, I've got pretty big ears myself. So,
And then, of course, Herschel being that fatherly type figure to Rick and telling him that the people left behind would still be strong. I really like that because Rick, except for Herschel, Rick didn't really have any characters like that in the show who were
And I don't know if this was ever covered in the comic books, but we never like hear about Rick's
family,
like mother, father, brother. Although we
got the one spinoff issue.
Yeah.
That was it.
Spinoff issue of a brother in Europe.
Barcelona.
Maybe that's one of the movies.
Hopefully that'd be awesome.
And of course, Sasha telling him that he's not lost and all of them telling him to wake up, I thought was really good. Even the Michonne Vision at the end telling him to wake up, was great. Yeah. And then, my last one is the fact that I added points for this episode because I literally got chills every time I watched it. I watched this episode 3 times and I got chills every time I heard that little girl and she puts the hat on and she says, I'm Judith. And I was just like, I'm getting chills now, even repeating it, because it was just such a cool thing. Her shooting, and I counted the shots. She fires 5 times from the woods. So even the fact that she was leaving one bullet in the gun in case it was needed, and that katana on that little short sword katana on her back.
Yeah.
Just everything down to the boots that she was wearing looked very similar to the boots that Rick was wearing on the bridge, that same color brown. And I'm sure that was planned by costuming. Yeah. You know, she was definitely in that braided hair and just the whole thing is just, it's just, this little girl is, I hope she's able to live up to the acting that she has shown. And if you watched if you were able to see the preview from, Talking Dead that showed her, I think she will. I think we're going to see.
Things out. She's a little ass kicker.
Yeah. And she played Rey, the
young Rey in Star Wars,
Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
I have to add to that, Steve, though. I got the chills when I saw Herschel put his hand on Rick's heart and wake up as if he was jump starting Rick's heart.
Oh, wow. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what do you have?
Well, the journey that Rick goes through in this episode as he bleeds out and he tries to get back to his family. He knows who his family is in the back of his head. He just kept denying it over and over, but with the hallucinations and everything that's going on, he's trying to get back to the real family, which is what he brought together, you know, with Michonne, with Judith, with everybody in Hilltop, all these people. And there was a little bit of questioning when during his hallucinations saying, when Herschel asked him, he goes, why are you here? And he says, I'm looking for my family. He goes, they're not here. And Herschel and that hallucination, knowing that those are his family that are alive, that are where he's at, because he's like stuck between two worlds. And you
much
would
like
think,
we are.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're all thinking as viewers, he's talking about Lori. He's talking about Carl. He's talking about Shane. He's talking about Dale. He's talking about T-Dog, everybody that's passed. But we all know deep down, he's looking for everybody that's alive that he's been with all this time.
Yeah.
So I the other part I would have would be Maggie's confrontation with Negan in the jail cell. This is different from the comic book, but the outcome is the same. Different situation, but the feels are there. This happened years later in the comic book, so if you guys, you know, are comic fans, we don't see this until way later on, and it's not really spoilery, but we already got it on the show. But it's pretty much the same situation, but not in the jail cell. And I got the feels from it because it's exactly what I read in the comic book. So I was really enjoying that part.
Yeah, I definitely had that. I loved it. I loved seeing Negan being completely broken.
Yeah.
And that really did it for me. What's up?
Do you think he really is broken? Or because I kept waiting for him, and I think there was something in on the Facebook page as well about this. I kept waiting for him to give a smile or give some kind of a wink and show that he was faking all that. But, you know, when I watched it the third time today, I agree with you, Brian. I think he really is broken.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had wondered about that, especially like last episode. But, you know, seeing him kind of do things even more extreme than he did when he was talking to Michonne. I mean, clearly, I think that Maggie can't kill him now because that would give him the release. And he doesn't deserve the release. He deserves to suffer.
Yes.
You know, so I know we're talk about this in a bit, about the, you know, does he deserve to die? But I'll just say that he doesn't deserve to live anymore. And I don't think what he's doing in that jail cell is living. Mm-hmm. At least when, you know.
So, he's stagnating.
Yeah.
That's all he's doing. He's just stagnating there. And people are just taking care of him hand over fist. But he's just living, what was that episode? Four walls?
Four walls and a roof?
Yeah. That's pretty much all he has.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You had another one.
Well, Rick's departure from the show. It's still sad to me, but more awesome than anything. This is awesome to me. I predicted this just from what Andrew Lincoln has just been saying ever since they announced his departure. I knew the choppa was going to come in some way. It was a key factor based on promotion from season 9, and we knew he was exiting. I didn't think a death would be a proper exit. It gives us more Rick Grimes for more, you know, for years to come.
He had to get to the chopper?
Get to the chopper!
I had it ready, but I just waited for the right moment. Although I don't think it was quite the right moment. I could have pulled the trigger a little earlier. Well, to that, I have to say, by the way, I didn't mention this when I gave my rating, so I'll mention this now. This is the second time that I've given a rating of he's not dead. And the first was season 6, episode 3. Thank you, the dumpster episode. Strangely enough.
Okay. He was Rickrolling.
I have to say, though, I was having real problems with the idea of Rick dying. And I was kind of worried that I was going to want to not do the podcast anymore. I figured I'd find a way, like I'd summon up the strength, like Shane talked about. But for me, the fact that he's alive and that we're still going to see him, even though he's off the show, I'm okay with it. It might be a little contrived, and I get people that bring that up. But I just, like I said last week, and I've said other places, this is probably, I'd say him and Picard are my two favorite characters on TV, period. And, maybe Worf would be in there too, for that matter. But anyway, those two, Rick Grimes and Picard, if Rick was going to die on Sunday night, I don't know how I would have like it would have had to make the story really, really compelling for me to want to keep going. Of course, they brought in the Next Generation. It was so funny when I saw them. I literally go, it's Walking Dead, the Next Generation. Anyway, I was, like I said, I was kind of worried that I wouldn't want to do the podcast anymore, but I don't have that feeling. I am totally okay with what is going to happen going forward here. I didn't expect, given his injury, that he'd leave the show this way. I kind of expected him to die, especially like he was bleeding so much. Like, I'll get to that in a bit. And we'll get into the whole announcement with the movies, but I'm going to say that with him being alive, they're going to have to do some splaining when these movies come out to explain why Rick never made it back to Alexandria. Because
amnesia.
We see now that they are doing a 6-year time jump, because apparently Judith is the age of Carl from the first season now.
Yeah.
So that means a 6-year time jump. So he never made it back in 6 years. Mm-hmm. I want to find out why.
Yeah, that's what Mark and I were talking about a little bit before we started recording. Yeah. Is that same thing? Is they're going to have to explain that to us, give us some sort of reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Jadis like said, oh, Rick. Oh, my name's Rick.
Yeah.
I'm your wife. My name's Anne.
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to like the dream sequences. And I mentioned last week, I told Mark why I thought we were going to have like a week or a what sauce. And I'll explain that when we saw the first few minutes of the episode, we see Rick in that hospital, and that clearly was a hospital in Atlanta. And it's like, I don't think the hospital that he was in Atlanta. That was a, you know, like a county hospital in, you know, whatever King County or whatever, not something in the big city. But then I realized, oh, this is just kind of fantasy, like, or, you know, like Rick's addled mind kind of trying to make sense of stuff. And especially when we see Shane there, and, you know, they go from being in Atlanta to being, you know, in the squad car, and they're not like at a gas station or fast food joint or whatever eating. They're in that field where Rick gets shot. Then it's kind of like, oh, okay, I see where they're going with. But I have to say that because I thought I was going to hate this dream sequences, I have to give this.
Oh, come on, man. That Murder of Crows didn't really give it away when they turned into helicopters coming at them.
No. I mean, I didn't. The thing was that I was worried that this is going to be too similar the way Tyrese died and his dream sequences. And yes, and I know this gets mentioned elsewhere, it was similar, but the execution was quite a bit different. And I thought that the stakes were quite a bit different this time. Because my take on that, although it was a beautiful episode, Tyrese had a punk death. Like he died because some, you know, zombie kid bit him, and he didn't really like, you know,
do anything. Fight his way out.
Yeah, he just basically died, and there was no heroism or anything like that. And Rick, on the other hand, I mean, he goes out in, you know, the biggest
glory.
Literally. I loved the Shane scene. Absolutely loved it. In fact, I wrote down some stuff about that he's like, I mentioned, I think earlier about him, what was it? She hasn't got your nose. Good thing she doesn't have my ears, man. how Shane talked about, like, how in the field when Rick killed Shane, how he took a page out of Shane's book. Like, he was saying, you know, it's got to be me here. And, you know, like, what the heck are you talking about? But what he meant is, like, Shane, he showed Shane type courage when he bit Joe's neck, when he took the machete to Gareth. And Shane says, you know, find the rage, the hatred, the loyalty and dig deep. And I loved how it ended with him like yelling, "Wake up!" And you know, that was, I love that scene. And I miss John Bernthal in this show. I think of villains, you know, I think he's been my favorite villain of this show. And I love those two characters, and you know, you can see how those two actors, you know, just love each other like brothers, and love when they interact together.
Yeah, well, I never really thought of Shane as a villain in any way. A lot of people think of him as that. I just think that he was just a survivor, he was struggling.
Let me rephrase that: antagonist or adversary. But he wasn't. He wasn't a villain. I'll
think Otis. That. Otis might consider him a villain. You know,
I would say so really too.
Yeah.
Hold on, you're holding me back. I got you. Hold on.
I mean, if we're to play devil's advocate here, you know, I think Otis would disagree with you.
I tend to agree with you, Steve. I couldn't help but cry when the Herschel scene came. I think it was a combination of being sad about Scott Wilson's passing, but it was so good to see that character again, and you know how much he's been missed in this show. Just that, even talking about it chokes me up a little bit.
It filled my heart so much when I saw him on screen, and not because of his passing, because I missed the character.
Yeah.
And Herschel was pretty much the Dale character 10 times more.
Yeah.
In the comic, and we kind of lost him too soon, in my opinion.
I have to say, yeah, for me it was a combination of the character and knowing Scott Wilson, you know, had passed away. But I have to say that the one that affected me the most, and for some, it's going to make no sense. I'm sure, Mark, you won't understand this one at all. Maybe Steve will. But Sasha's dream sequence was the one that really hit me hard. And I think it has nothing to do with Sasha, or very little to do with Sasha. Although that last, you know, how she goes out and that... the music and all that. I can't remember the name of the song, but how she passed away, that was pretty pretty hard, pretty moving. But she now plays Michael Burnham on Star Trek Discovery, which is now, I have to say, and please don't hate us, but it's now my favorite TV show. In fact, I just did another binge watch of it, and it just... I love her on Star Trek Discovery. I just absolutely love her. And I just, when she was on screen, I couldn't stop crying. And I realized from a character perspective, her sequence using that character it was compelling. It made sense, but there were other characters that would have fit better, AKA Glenn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that part. And I didn't realize it until I watched it this third time, but I was like going, why Sasha? Why not like so many other people that you think of that could have been in there?
Lori, could have been Carl, could have been anybody.
It could have even been Beth. It would have been an interesting juxtaposition there to have Beth, but obviously she looks, I don't know how different she is now than, but yeah, that character, it doesn't seem like that's the one he would go to in his mind for that.
Abraham would have been a better choice.
Abraham would have been, I could see Abraham. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Strength.
So I didn't mind her character, being on there. And of course, like I said, I don't know what it is, but just seeing her, that's how I think it was her as an actress, and how much, I've now
associate her with
Well, I think it has to do with the strength of the character and what she portrays, especially on the Discovery show.
Yeah,
as you better, well as you better, what she did.
you better watch that show, Mark.
Oh, I have to be on two podcasts?
We would like you on there eventually.
I would definitely do it. I have to binge watch it and just suck it all in.
Yeah. I will also say that I love the Michonne scene as well. I knew right away that that was not reality. Like, especially when they're all standing back, it's like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. They're all just standing there kind of watching.
Yeah. But I thought it was cool how, you know, she kissed him and, you know, said it was real and then says, but wake up or now you need to wake up. Getting into reality, I loved the Maggie Michonne scene. You know, I did love the Maggie Negan scene, but I also love the Maggie and Michonne scene, specifically that Michonne lets Maggie see him. Like, she did not have a compelling reason why to keep her away, knowing that she might and probably would kill Negan. She couldn't stop her. She just like, I can't do this. I have no valid reason to stop you, because a lot would agree. I think most people would agree that Negan deserved to die. Does he still deserve to die? Hell yes. But as I said before, if death is a release for him, then he needs to keep suffering as long as possible. All right. Well, let's move on to the weak variety. Weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
All right. Steve, you've got one.
I do. And so Tilly says, OMG, that horse was just the worst. It's afraid of walkers, so it tosses Rick. It doesn't mind walkers, so it stands around and waits for him to jump back on over and over again until it finally abandons him. Just the worst. One job, horse. You had one job.
And you blew it. You blew it. You blew it. You had it all and you blew it.
If there was ever an appropriate time to play that clip, it was. Yes. It was that.
And I,
Tilly knew that I was going to do that. You could tell.
And I totally agree with Tilly on this point. In fact, this was the other huge, huge hole, huge thing that bothered me about this episode, that every time it took me out of the episode, every time that horse, if you notice, and I can run him down at the very, once he pulls himself off the rebar, he gets to the horse, which is just standing there, and he pulls himself up onto the horse, and the horse rears back again the same way it had just reared back that threw him, but this time he's able to hold on.
Yeah.
Then the horse gets to the cabin, lets him get off, and then just kind of stands around waiting as all the dead are approaching the cabin.
That made no sense at all.
For Rick to come out, get on him, and then he rears up a little bit, not as much as he did before, but he rears up a little bit, and again Rick holds on, and then they go, and it doesn't throw him until he gets to the camp, and then the horse runs off, and I'm just like, that horse, it's like it had a mind of its own. It knew where Rick didn't want to go, and that's where it took him. But subconsciously, that's where Rick wanted to go.
It was the horse with no name.
If anything, the way that the horse acted, you'd think it was translucent like the deer.
Yeah. Well, it was. That was one of the reasons why the first time I watched the episode, I kept waiting for it to go back to him, that this was all a dream and he's still on that rebar. You know, because the horse acted so differently than it did the previous episode. So
yeah,
it just took me out of it every time.
So Cheryl says, to follow up Tilly's comment, the horse seemed not to not run off ever from Rick or the walkers. Why not? If it got scared and threw Rick, you would think it would have bolted. But when Rick busted out of the cabin, it was in the back waiting on him. And then Negan, was he really broken or is he faking so Maggie wouldn't kill him? Interesting. I think that was a play on the psyche, though. That's just my thought with Maggie and Negan.
Yeah, because for one thing, she was acting like, you know, or he was acting like his usual jerk self. So,
yeah, it was a weird turn for him because it seemed like he realized during the conversation, because, you know, like he has that moment where she tells him Glenn's name, and then, you know, 4, 5, 10 seconds later, he's like, oh, I've forgotten his name again already, you know, and she doesn't say Glenn again to him, but she just keeps telling him to come into the light, to get on his knees. And it almost seemed like he flipped a switch when he realized, I have to be pathetic for her to kill me. I'm backpedaling on my own thought.
Yeah. Well, I think I brought this up later, but I'll bring it up now. I think it was a role reversal, kind of like a reverse psychology where he really wanted to die because he was stuck and trapped in there. He had nobody to talk to. And when people do talk to him, it's very much abrasive and right in front of him. And all he does is eat, sleep, ponder, and sit there all the time. And all he wants to do is die. So that's where everything came up about his wife. And his thought in my mind is that, oh, I have to get her so mad at me that she would just kill me. Mm-hmm. And then he was begging for her to do that. And that was at that point where it's like he had lost himself and just wants it all to end so he could be with his wife.
Dieta's next. So I'm thinking, oh, and I should mention that between last week and, of course, we asked Dieta if she would teach a course in emoji, I found a most wonderful website called emojipedia.org. And from that, and I have a link to it on the Facebook group, now I can speak emoji with a translator. So she says, so I'm thinking, with a thinking face times three, did Rick just lead the walkers in a circle? Because when he got on the horse, he was supposedly leading them away from the bridge, but somehow he ended up back at the bridge. Thinking face times two, woman shrugging times two. I'm going to give the next one because that was kind of short. And this is a big one. So Lara's next. She has several. The Sasha dream sequence seemed odd. I heard they wanted to get Steven Yeun for that scene and it didn't work out, but I would have preferred them just to take it out than work something else in. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked a little bit about that already. She continues. She says the Shane and Herschel scenes made sense and brought some redemption and closure to Rick. Whereas I never felt Rick was close enough to Sasha to be getting a lecture on humanity and the circle of life from her. But I guess Gimple really wanted his signature moralizing monologue in there. Also, I just got the feeling that Rick's story in this episode was a bit of a retread of the Tyrese episode. Sans the impactful death at the end. Yeah, and I talked about that a little bit. Like, you know, I think, first of all, that Glenn or Abraham might have been a better choice. I don't think that Laurie could have played that because there were a lot of things that Laurie was. Wise was not one of them. But, you know, even Carl could have played that, and not having him in the episode at all, to me, was a bit of a... It was part of where, you know, it, because originally I watched it, I was like, this is a perfect episode for me. But that was, I think, one reason why I had to mark it down just a little bit, because it didn't even have the, you know, Carl say, what's your wound? Mm-hmm. That would have made sense to me, but, you know, it didn't happen. And, yeah, I already talked about the Tyrese retread. I really feared it was going to be that. And it would have been a hero's death, but which gets to her weakest of the weak sauce, which is the last minute saving of Rick Grimes. For a larger than life iconic character, and one that the past 9 seasons have hinged on, to have a chance to go out in a heroic blaze of glory just to be abducted and whisked away by the trash queen did not feel right. And I love that you called her the trash queen, Lara. Especially after all the AMC hype, it felt like AMC drove up to the precipice of being truly edgy and bold and then just realized, damn, this is our cash cow. We can't kill Rick Grimes, and sent in the magic helicopter. which, by the way, has been seen by both Rick and Negan before this point in the show, and neither has said boo about it to anyone. WTF. Yeah, to that, I also have to say that you have to be able to hear that helicopter from miles away. So why did the, and she said that she was like 1.6 miles from, mm-hmm. I guess, the trash heap. I don't know how far away she was from the bridge, but.
You would have heard something.
Yeah, that occurred to me that I was like, wait a minute. Why, if she's close enough to see the smoke, to pick up all the radio transmissions, nobody notices this helicopter flying overhead. Just another, and I think, Laura, was that Laura's weak sauce, right?
Yeah, that was Laura.
She put it way better than I could have. That was everything that I had my same thoughts about as far as Rick Grimes' exit. So.
Yeah, especially when you have a big A on there and you think the A team is coming. And there's no B.A. Baracus around. You know, or Murdoch flying the helicopter.
Yeah. Yep, the A team. A or B team. Yeah, so what does that mean that Rick's a B?
Alive or bitten?
Yeah, I don't think so. I have this is later down in my notes, and I think Mark, you put a note that you concur with this. My theory on the whole A, well, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it later.
Now Jadis, you know, being the one that saves him, I mean, I wouldn't trust her as far as I could throw her. It's definitely an odd choice to be the one to, you know, save him, but it had been set up that way from, you know, season 7, essentially, because she had mentioned, you know, in the season finale of that, what did she say now? She said to Negan about, like, they negotiated how many people she was going to get. And, you know, this whole A or B thing, which is recent, but she had A on the storage container and all of that. So there is some precedent there as far as her being the one, and, you know, and we already saw the helicopter at the trash dump. But if you're going to throw any shade at anyone, I would say throw it at the executives of AMC, because they want Marvel Cinematic Universe here, or DC Universe, or what I think HBO is trying to do with Game of Thrones right now. That whole,
or Netflix. I really wouldn't point it towards DC because they're terrible. But
okay,
but definitely more of like a Marvel Netflix kind of thing where they want to branch out, which is pretty good.
Right, like I believe that HBO is trying to do this now with you know, all the Westeros Essos stuff with, you know, the Game of Thrones sequels, and we know that those are going forward, or prequels or whatever they are, but in the same universe. And CBS right now is trying to do this with Star Trek. You know, they've got Star Trek Discovery. They're bringing that Picard series. They're doing an animated series. And I think that's just the start of them. So they are trying to do this with The Walking Dead. And to me, they had already started this when they did Fear. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and at this point, I'd have to say with mixed results. To me, this whole thing that they're trying to do now should have been started 2 years ago. I think.
Oh, yeah.
We can't help but say at this point that things are in a decline. I mean, the fact that, and we'll get to this in a bit, but, you know, Rick, this is supposedly his, you know, last episode. We think he's going to die, and it only gets 5.4 million. That is surprising. If you look at, you know, how many viewers it even got like a season ago, it's surprising that things have gone this slow. So it might be too little too late at this point. Like, they're making a universe, but nobody's going to care. You know, or at least they, not nearly as many as would have cared. But we'll get more into this. I mean, if you are under a rock, you don't know about what was announced right after the show. But we'll get to that more in the news. But it is mentioned throughout the feedback, I think. So we will bring it up here and there. But anyway, okay, our weak sauce, Steve. What do you got?
The only thing I have that wasn't that we haven't already talked about ad nauseum is I really, really, and I'm not apologizing for this at all. I wanted Maggie to put bullets in Negan every time he said, kill me. I just wanted her to go, okay, and shoot him. I love that scene. I'm not, the actors are great, but it just, for me, the reality is if that had been me, put bullets in him, man, just get it over with. I don't need him to suffer. I want him gone. So, and that's all I've got that hasn't already been talked about. I'm pretty adamant about this.
I know. It's you want that cow bullet to go right into his skull.
Whatever. This guy just bugs me.
Negan's ugly?
No, he bugs me. He bugs me.
Oh, I thought you said he's ugly.
It bugs me that they're letting him stick around and be his annoying self.
Yeah. So I won't disagree with you.
Yeah, but if he was ugly, then a lot of the women wouldn't be going to him all the time.
Well, he may have an ugly personality.
Negan.
All right, Mark, what do you have?
Well, Steve, you posted you hate that horse not getting spooked. Yeah. So I'm going to add to that. Yes, that horse was a bit over the top in the beginning, and then he was just mincemeat then. A little off for me as well, you know. It bothered me, but maybe it was the horse with no name, and it was there for a reason. We don't know. Maybe it was part of Rick's hallucination. Or maybe it was just there to get him on his travels. So it kind of found me being, wait, this horse is sticking around? Why?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then I thought over the abundance of the overabundance of hallucinations was a little weak. A good way to portray his journey, but too much at times. It was a little bit pushed. In some respect, in some ways, but we all needed that push, I guess, because to propel the story. But in my sense, it was a little bit weak because, all right, I already knew that these were hallucinations. And I think we were already projected that thought with the previews and everything else.
Yeah.
The other thought I had was the Maggie's exit was a little bit weak. And we already know that this was Lauren Cohan's last episode, just as well as Andrew Lincoln's. There was not a real exit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The only bad writing I could think of for this episode completely, because we're going to jump ahead and she's not going to be there. She just disappeared just like Rick. So what's the solution? How are they going to resolve this? Is Jesus going to say, oh, Maggie left a note? Just like Matt, like Georgie, you know, I really want to know.
Yeah, you may not know this, listeners, but this was a news item that I don't think was even brought up on Talking Dead, but I had this, and I was going to bring this up later, but Angela Kang has confirmed that this is also the last episode this season anyway, and maybe forever, depending on the success of Whiskey Cavalier. Lauren Cohan's last episode, and absolutely no fanfare about that at all. But supposedly both, I thought, were going to do 6 episodes. So I don't know if that means that they'll be back in some kind of flashback or dream sequence, or if those reports were false. Could be either way.
I'm starting to think they were false. They were the whole 6.
Well, they confirmed that Andrew Lincoln was definitely for 5. Yeah, but whether
he was in the same, they were saying 6 for both of them. That's the lie that they were putting out. Cause I remember 6 was the number
that
everybody was saying. And we didn't know if it was going to be all in the first half or some in the back half. And, so when they announced, when I started counting in there, I'm like, wait a minute, 3 episodes, it's only 5 episodes that he's going to be in. I was a little confused by that. And I'm with you guys. It seems a disingenuous, definitely to Lauren Cohan not give her that exit episode.
We don't know this, but perhaps, these episodes were shot out of sequence. So, you know, maybe that this was the 6th episode shot.
Could be.
I guess we'll know that at some point in the future. But yeah, I mean, several things on that, I guess you could say, like the fact that it was her exit. It was, I mean, we'll see what they do next week, but I do agree with you, not only on it being weak as far as the story and saying goodbye to her, but weak in terms of Lauren Cohan. Mm-hmm. I mean, so yeah, Mark, I agree with you on that. I already talked about the Glenn and Carl stuff. You know, especially Carl, I think. I think Carl should have been in the episode somehow, in some way.
Yeah.
And not just a body, you know, and it was a, I guess, a stuffed, you know, a dummy, not even a real, not even a body double. And yeah, you know, we know that he cut his hair and that.
They could put a wig on him. They did that with Ezekiel and they're going to do that with Carol. So
I really wonder if it was, had something to do with his father and all the, you know, sour grapes after him being, you know, killed.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I kept this on my weak sauce, but I don't know how weak it actually is, because I was like, can he really shoot walkers from that distance with his crossbow? I thought that was a little weak, but that I looked it up this afternoon, and I guess 80 yards is possible to be accurate if you're a good enough crossbow shooter. And of course, Daryl would be an Olympian in the Zombie Olympics when it comes to the crossbow. So gold medal winning crossbow, you know, archer.
Yep.
The other weak sauce that I had listed, and I'm going to cheat and move some of my what sauce as weak sauce after we talked about it, but can we please have some walkers with short sleeves and shorts, you know, or something? Like, that was the one thing, like seeing all these hundreds of walkers walking up the bridge. They're all like wearing these, you know, lumberjack shirts and these thick sweaters, and you know it's like, come on.
Yeah,
I know why they do it, but it's beyond the belief at this point, the suspension of disbelief. They should have had at least a couple of them that were in short sleeves or something.
Hold on, I'm actually messaging Greg Nicotero now. And yeah, Greg, you need to stop doing that.
Do you did you talk to him at all at Walker's?
Not this weekend. No. I've talked to Greg like good three times in my life, and he is always so pleasant to talk to. He's so funny.
Yeah. But moving something from my what sauce to here. Okay. So why didn't Rick die? The whole episode, he's like bleeding profusely, like there's drips of blood everywhere. So how the heck did he survive?
Oh yeah, well, and then at the, when you see him in the camp, he's got his hands and it's just gushing out of
exactly.
And I'm like, how did this, is like Reservoir Dogs type blood coming out of him, and he's surviving. It was just another one of those points that bothered me about the episode, that I couldn't give it a perfect score, because I'm like, there's just too many of these things that we don't have any explanation for.
And all right, so if there's a listener out there that's an actual doctor, can you please message us and let us know exactly how long it would take if you got impaled by some rebar and how long it bleeds out, because we had to suspend our disbelief.
Well, yeah, and then it would have been coming. This is the other thing, is because it was all the way through. It would have been coming out both sides the same amount? Like it,
yeah.
And you can't just tie a sheet around yourself tightly, and that's going to keep the blood in. It just
It also looked like he must have severed an artery, because the way that it wasn't just that, you know, the he was bleeding from, you know, veins. There would be like these squirts that, you know, we kept seeing, and it's like, okay, that's an artery. That's not veins. That's bad. And so how do you survive? And for that matter, I got to ask, how did he, when he got out, when Jadis finds him, he looked like he got through that explosion without a scratch.
Yeah, not burned, no
burns. No injuries.
And he washed up on the shore too.
Yeah,
he was like laying there.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. It, honestly, we had to suspend our disbelief. But the thing is, also, it's like, what did he do, Rambo?
Yeah.
I gotta take this gun bullet and put the gunpowder and shoot. It's like, yeah,
it was almost like MacGyver, something. Yeah. You know,
well, they did that in Rambo where he used the gunpowder to actually seal the wound in some way. But they, you know, honestly, I guess because we live in this world and this world is what it is, maybe he's able to survive.
Yeah, it was. I'm with you, Mark, on that one. That was a.
Well, I mean, it was not just that he survived. He also got through the explosion without a scratch. Yet, everyone thinks he died.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know that yet. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can agree with that. But they make it seem like everyone there thinks that he died in the explosion. And not only did he not die in the explosion, but it appears that he got through that without a scratch. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, he definitely had a scratch.
Yeah.
Well, and
he was already extremely injured, but somehow he survived both that and the explosion. I mean,
and he washed up far enough away. If we're going to believe the people at the bridge couldn't see the helicopter, that means he had to have washed downriver far enough. Like, he had to be in that river for a good minute or two.
Oh, even longer.
Or longer before he was able to however he got himself up on it. And you saw how fast that water was rushing. The the Zed bodies were just flying by. So how did he get up
to that? Yeah, that's like Whitewater Rapids.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of stuff in that. That just, one of those things where you had to keep him alive. So,
okay. I'm going to bring it down to 9.5. I'll be with you guys. It'll be 9.5 across the board. The more I think about this one point, it was way too far.
Over the top?
It was.
Okay. All right. You know what? This is a show. And we have to accept it as is.
I loved it. Don't get me wrong.
We all love it. Yeah, I'm not.
We all love the show. Come on.
I still gave it a 9.5. So
yeah,
same here.
Yeah, it just wasn't perfect. You know, I definitely thought it was perfect at first, but the more you talk about it, the more you think about it, the more you realize, oh, okay.
You're thinking more into it,
Gimple. Anyway. I don't think that was a Gimple thing. Just think that, you know, it was stretched. All right. Sad sauce.
Aww.
And the way I like to think about it is that it was written for him to die in that scene. And it was only the Deus Ex AMC that came in to save him with the helicopter.
Get to the chopper!
Very good.
All right.
So our first sad sauce comes from Cheryl, and she says, I bawled like a baby seeing Herschel and Rick and his saying he was sorry for all that had happened. Knowing it was Scott Wilson's last acting gig is awfully sad, but glad it was on TWD.
Yeah. I was bawling my eyes out too. Not that that's a surprising thing since I seem to do it all the time. But anyway, it was sad. I love, like we said before, I love seeing the character, but just knowing that he wasn't around anymore and, you know, sad that he was gone. It was sad. Anyway, let's move on.
Dieta says, frowny face, Carol and Maggie holding Michonne back as they watch the bridge blow up with Rick on it. And Daryl's face as he loses another brother. Faces.
That's sad face.
Yes, sad face. But I gave the verbal equivalent. All right. Glad I didn't have to witness the rumble in Alexandria with Michonne and Maggie. Wah face. That would have been some intense fighting. After Maggie expressed her feelings about Negan still being alive, Michonne handed over the keys. I believe because of what Maggie said about it had been Rick who had gotten killed, she would have killed Negan already. These are two powerful ladies. Add Carol to the mix, and you've got a dynamic ass-kicking trio. Smiley face, or extremely happy face. Happy face.
Technically called grinning, squinting face.
Alrighty. I don't have that emoji Wikipedia up. Even though, after all of, Maggie doesn't kill Negan, and I wasn't so ready for her to end him, squinting, smiley face, but she decides that his current and continued suffering is enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
Glynis is next. She has a few here. She says, Andrew Lincoln, Rick Grimes, finished with the TWD series. Daryl tearing up and turning away when Rick blew the bridge up, knowing, for him at least, that his brother was gone.
The smile cry.
And I wonder, I'll mention this here, I wonder if that is going to play in, because the way that it made me think that he was going to isolate himself. I'm wondering if we're going to see that going forward with him.
He's going to be Wolverine.
I don't know. I mean, with him, he's taking over the lead role, right?
No, so. No, they kind of kiboshed that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I think he's kind of like the lone wolf. Hence why in previews they show him with a dog. So I think he is kind of a lone scavenger, kind of like when he was Rogue, when he was looking for Sophia back in the day.
Yeah.
He was eating squirrels. He had them around his neck. I think he's just doing his own thing to survive on his own, but still keeping tabs on some of the communities.
I wonder if he blames himself for Rick's death because of the stupid sinkhole.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because he got into that fight with Rick. The last thing he did, I'll do this and you do that. And next thing you know, the last thing he sees is Rick at the bridge, and Rick is mortally wounded, and he shoots the dynamite. And then next thing you know.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. Well, I mean, until we know, we won't know until next week. So
exactly.
Yeah. She also has the hallucination of Rick and Michonne together on the bridge with the survivors he had led for so long, and Rick realizing his family weren't lost. They were there all the time. That's a nice way to put it. Us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed that. Didn't think it was sad, but I like that. He found his family. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Steve, what do you have?
So my sad sauce, we kind of already talked about this, but I couldn't find it, so I'm gonna read it here. That Maggie and Michonne interaction outside the jail cell, it was so well acted, and then it made me sad to hear Maggie say she can live with what comes next because she can't live with it now.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to express earlier.
Yeah.
And then Negan was just sad.
Yeah, he definitely was sad. I agree with both points there.
Seeing Negan the way he was, it was just sad in general.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I have to say that I loved seeing him broken. I love seeing him suffer. I don't know. What else you got?
Seeing Herschel back and talking to Rick. I miss Scott Wilson so much. That man was and still is such a treasure to film and TV. I was sad and biting my teeth when I saw Rick having to pull himself up along with his belt off of the rebar. That was so,
yeah.
It was hard.
It was
hard to, you know, you could feel it. You could feel the pain as you watched him.
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned a lot of the things that I would say are sad, but the one thing that hasn't been mentioned, I cried when I thought Rick died, because when it exploded, I gasped. I was like, oh no. And it was so sad watching, well, everyone's reaction, but specifically Michonne. I mean, her crying out, you see it, but it's muted. There's no like audio of it, but just seeing that awful pain. And, you know, I really felt for Michonne at that moment. And of course, I felt for myself because I was sad that Rick seemingly had died there. Although that was pretty short lived, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So let's move to what sauce now.
What?
So Glynis has a couple of what sauces. Her first one is Rick's alive. I don't really know why that's a what sauce, but okay. That helicopter. Her second one is that helicopter and flying away over the cabin Rick had been in moments before, and then the same scene morphing into years later, 6 years, I believe, with the cabin dilapidated and trees and brush grown bigger, and then enter Magna and her gang fighting off walkers in that very same location, ending with the grand entrance of Judith Grimes. Just gave me chills. Me too, Glynis. Me too. I got chills with that. And it was 6 years. They, on Talking Dead, they said it at least twice. And I think three times from three different people said 6 years. I think Gimple said 6 years. I think Melissa Ride said 6 years. And I think even Andrew Lincoln in one of his interview sessions with Yvette Nicole Brown says 6 years. So
yes, he did.
So we emphasize 6 years.
6 years.
Well, it makes sense too, because if Judith is supposed to be the age of Carl, I believe Carl was 10
mm-hmm.
at the start. So, and I think she was about 4. So that makes sense if it was 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you realize that in this season, in 5 episodes, we've progressed 7.5 years.
Further than we've ever gone in the entire 9 seasons of the show.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's pretty funny because the first, 8 was literally about, 3, maybe 3.5 years?
Yeah. Something like that.
And that's
what they confirmed.
In dispute. I mean, I've seen that Wikia page where they had tried to do a timeline. Mind you, that's not official. But they were still saying it had been 600 or 700 days. It wasn't even – they were saying it wasn't even 2 years.
Yeah.
And I thought that that whole timeline was a bunch of hooey. But that Rick was in a coma for 59 days.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
You can't survive more than, a week without getting fluids. So how could he possibly be in a hospital sitting there in a coma, not getting any fluids at all? He wouldn't survive past a week. He wouldn't probably survive past 3 days. You know.
So Shane really took advantage, huh?
Yeah.
Cindy Peterson Cindy Peterson actually stated that on the Walk of Stalkers podcast, because she went through everything specifically about the timeline and everything and how it was, because she did a lot of research and it was amazing. And she just stated out, it's like maybe 2.5 years total.
Yeah.
All this stuff happened within this time. And she started going on and on and on about it. And this was long after I was off the Walker Stalkers podcast that I was on recently.
Yeah, a few weeks back, Walking Dead cast had somebody on who had just
It was Cindy. It was the same person.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she said that one of the ones that surprised me the most, I think, was when she said that the length of time between Herschel's death and Beth's death is 10 days.
Yeah.
Or 7 to 10 days, something like that, between those two deaths. And but yet for us, it was 3 seasons.
Exactly.
So,
and that shows you how long they prolonged two seasons.
Yeah. But yeah. And then she said, when Rick banished Carol, she was actually only gone for a day or 2 days, you know?
Yeah. I knew that too at that time.
So that's another one that covered several episodes, but yet was only so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long was he under the dumpster?
Probably a day.
Probably a few hours.
I would say a day at most, because he had to walk all the way that way back.
But it just goes to show you, she had all that stuff talking about how more time had passed, and then they leapfrog another 6 years. And it's kind of funny, all this has now happened under the rule of Angela Kang. Mm-hmm. 7.5 years pass under Angela Kang, and maybe under Gimple a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning that Angela realized, hey, hold on, you crazy pants people, you need to make this a little bit more fluid so that people can understand it. Wow. We can always go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one.
Cheryl says, the time hop surprised me because it is 6 years. But that makes sense. I think go to Judith being the brazen little elf she will be.
Yep. All right. That is the last of the listener what sauces. What do you have for us, Steve?
So my first one was already talked about, was the random box of dynamite. My second one, I'll expand upon it a little bit. We've already talked about the fact that Rick survived is kind of a what, but where are they taking him? When will we see him? Or when will we find out, if ever, is my what? And then the final what sauce I had is the fact that Anne calls, or Jadis, I guess, calls Rick a friend. What? She says, I have to save a friend because he saved me. You left because you thought he didn't like you. She left because they were all suspicious of her, and that's why she felt she had to leave. So now she's calling him
I hadn't thought of that, but that makes a lot of sense. It's almost like those two writers weren't involved with the first four episodes, you know.
Or it's kind of like what you said, was that the whole plan was for him to die on that bridge, and then somebody went, wait a minute, we can't have him die, we need to stick something at the end that gets him out of here. Yeah. You know,
maybe it was Schwarzenegger that had him on, you know, on the helicopter at the time, going, yeah, do you have the passenger?
Get to the chopper.
I just wonder, Andrew Lincoln talked about this on Talking Dead. Supposedly, you know, originally the plan was that Andrew Lincoln was going to leave the show at the end of season 8.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was supposed to bleed out at underneath that tree where he had that wound. Mm-hmm.
That makes so much sense hearing that, but that wasn't, in fact, what ended up happening. I guess the way he told it is that he was at Comic-Con and he realized that he couldn't leave them, you know,
he couldn't leave that close to Carl's death was the way, but it was, he didn't think he was right to lose the entire Grimes family in one.
Yeah.
One season.
And it also seemed like he wasn't ready to leave the show either. So like Andrew Lincoln, the person, you know, mm-hmm. wasn't ready to leave his friends. And I have to say that I think it was probably the right move to delay his, because if he had died there in that season finale, I mean, it would have been like, what have they done to this show?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And even if they were taking him away, we'd still ask that question. So giving some distance, I think, makes a lot of sense. It is curious, though, that they killed him off, they almost killed him off in episode 5. It wasn't like for once something like this happened. Not even during a mid-season finale, you know?
Right.
It's certainly surprising.
Yeah. And like I said, it's, and then of course what Talking Dead confirmed, that he's not dead. We know that, but that he's going to come back at some future point, not in this show though. And that really bothered about them very adamantly saying. And so, where's the future for, we'll see, TNG.
But your point about Anne calling Rick a friend or Jadis.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you.
Well, she also stated that he saved her at some point, and that was the whole point.
Well, the one way that he probably did save her was by allowing her in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Morgan.
They came and got her from the.
Right.
After Simon's group killed all of her people.
Right.
They came and they got her. And so,
Yeah, I mean, that I could see calling him a friend based on that, but there hadn't been a real friendship kind of drawn out there. We didn't really see it on screen.
Yeah, no, and maybe that's what happened in that year and a half that we didn't get to see.
Yeah,
especially in that first scene when you see them in the first episode, he goes, "Anne, you're right. Oh, we have the seeds."
Right.
And
okay. Yeah. Cause
she was elated at that time.
Yeah. So maybe I could see them, but it just seemed odd to me for her to call him a friend when the whole reason why she left was because they weren't treating her like they trusted. Yeah. They were treating her like she wasn't trusted, that, you know, so it just seemed weird that at the end, unless it was just a lie for her to get on the helicopter.
Yep. I agree with all those points because I don't know. It's kind of mentally unstable to have that feeling that, you know, first he blames me, but then he's a friend. So which is he, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. He's suspicious of her, but then a few episodes later calls him a friend.
Yeah.
Mark, what do you have for what sauce?
Well, that leads me on to mine, you know, Jadis slash Anne getting a free pass with these people due to Rick. This is awesome, crazy stuff. I hope that comes out in the future. I hope to see something in this future movie that we get, you know, maybe there's some sort of explanation based upon it.
Mm-hmm.
So we already spoke about this in length.
Mrs. Jadis.
I add on that herd was a huge herd. What?
Yeah. What?
How did it get so big so fast?
Well, remember it was two. Remember they said there were two herds that were coming together. So it was two. It was actually two herds merging, and then add in what we're assuming had to be some of the saviors that were killed at the camp.
You know, Cordelia and Tybalt.
Yeah. So you had two herds come together, and then you also had however many saviors were killed in that skirmish with Carol that we still don't, and I don't know if we're ever going to find out what that
was. But was it a loud noise that brought all these things together? You know, that was the concerning part of me. I'm like, wait, how did both these things come together to come to one huge horde of.
Well, yeah, that's what they were saying is because Eugene was already worried about them. The two herds merging. And then when they had the big, whatever, they had some sort of firefight there at the camp. And that's what attracted the herds to the bridge area. Now, albeit I'm in agreement with you, the timing is really weirdly off on the whole thing about how they got there so quickly. And because the only thing I could figure is that the amount of time Rick was on his little vision quest is not the same amount of time that it actually took him to get to the bridge.
Yeah.
Is the only thing I can figure. Cause it just seemed like it came together very quickly.
Yeah.
I am with you. There is a little bit of, like I said, there's a little bit of a time error there. I think where, you know, how did they come together so quickly?
And I have to add on, what was that with that Evil Dead cabin? I'm sorry. I love the Evil Dead. I'm hoping Greg Nicotero put that in for fun because he was on the effects team for Evil Dead 2, which was also filmed in the same area of Georgia. Unfortunately, that cabin is no longer there, but they recreated it in some way. I'm hoping they didn't really mention this at all on Talking Dead or anything. I'm just hoping to ask Greg this and say, did you put that in there for a particular reason? Because that screamed out Evil Dead, especially with the deer head that was inside the cabin that I noticed.
Yeah, and the deer head is definitely, I think it was definitely a homage to the Evil Dead cabin. I only wish we could be 100% sure that it was if there had been a swinging bench at the front of that cabin, which there wasn't. I went back and watched it specifically looking for that, looking to see if there was a swinging bench in the front of the cabin, because that would have definitely been a huge flag for us Evil Dead fans to know, oh, this is the cabin, or suppose it's a homage to that cabin. So.
Yeah, it was definitely there. And the first thing I saw when I saw the cabin was like, it's smaller, but yeah, it gave that right away. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it had that vibe about it.
I loved it, especially with the Zeds just coming out and through the door right at Rick at that point.
All right. Well, I gave some of my what sauce already. How did Jadis get the RV?
So did you see that? Did you see the article that someone posted about the whole Heath thing? Or is that going to be spoilers to say something about that?
I actually mentioned that. I think I put that in there at one point.
Okay.
So if you don't want to hear this, any kind of spoiler stuff, you might skip ahead a little bit. But Mark posted an article that explained that RV is the RV that Heath was driving. Because remember, Tara had to walk back to Alexandria.
Yep.
And so Heath had that RV. And so the thought now is, or the fan theory is, and Angela Kang kind of confirmed it by saying that is Heath's RV, is that Jadis kidnapped Heath and that's how she got the RV. And so that's where the RV came.
Okay.
But it doesn't really, the problem we again go back to the same problem that we've had with this show since the beginning, is timing and distances doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
Because he wasn't in the RV. Remember, he got taken away, or the RV left, and she found that card. Tara
the
found
PPP
that card.
Card. Yeah,
that card there, and then the RV is gone. And so then the next time we see the RV is when it's in the junk pile, or in the trash heap there. That screenshot that somebody showed of, you can see behind Rick, you can see the RV parked kind of in the junkyard area. And then we see Anne driving it in this episode. So
I'm curious to see if that PPP card shows up in another season.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I don't think it'll be a season of Walking Dead. I think it's going to be one of those miniseries or movies that
they're... Well, it sounds to me like we may find that Heath is going to be in these movies with Rick.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That's what the assumption is that I think the people are making.
Yeah. I didn't realize that that was the RV. I thought it was, because it mentioned on Talking Dead, there was, you know, in the...
Inside the Dead,
it mentioned RV from season 7, but I thought it was the other RV, not the one that Heath and Tara had.
Yeah, I got the same impression from Inside the Dead. It seemed to indicate that it was the RV that they were driving, like you said, when Negan stopped them.
Right.
But now they're saying, no, it's not that RV. It's the RV that Tara and Heath were in. So.
See, and when I saw it, I thought it was the RV, the regular Alexandria RV.
Mm-hmm.
And because I believe that RV they got from the satellite place, it wasn't one that Alexandria had. It was one that they took from the satellite place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what's going to find out, if we're ever going to find out. So it's definitely a what. You've got a good what there that I hadn't even thought of.
Yeah, and the other what that I had that I hadn't heard anybody say as well is, we see the aftermath of a camp battle, mm-hmm. but what happened there? Clearly, we see dead on both sides, but you know, when we see the people, you know, after that, it doesn't seem like they're fighting. And I think there were saviors there. It wasn't just it clearly was, there were saviors, because. I'll have to save this for later, but I did see some stuff from the next episode. So saviors that were at the camp are alive. I'll just say that. So, all right. Well, now we are going to get into our regular feedback. And my goodness, this is a long episode.
Oh, shit!
The wrong button. I think I might leave that one in.
Really, Simon? Really?
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. So here is a voicemail from Tilly.
Hi, this is Tilly calling in from Toronto, Ontario, Canada for the... Episode number 5, What Comes After. I'm going to give this episode 10 out of 10 Angela Kangs, because she is killing it this year. Honestly, I had thought that this season, and maybe they would go one more season, and then that would be it after Rick has left. But from what I've seen, from what she's doing this season, I mean, it's just amazing. She is just killing it. I love every single episode this year. It's going really great. This episode I really enjoyed because, I mean, I wasn't really looking forward to seeing another flashbacky type death episode. Tyrese's death episode was it's my number one all-time favorite episode. I absolutely loved the way that they did that one. And I wasn't looking forward to seeing another one that was going to try and beat it or try and be, you know, the same kind of thing. But that said, after having watched it, I actually really liked what they did. I liked that it was Rick's journey from the beginning of the show, all the people that he's lost, all the people that he's loved, all the things that he's gone through. I loved that he got to talk with Sasha and Shane and Herschel and sort of, I mean, even though it was only in his own head, that he got to hear, you know, his thoughts on what he's been through. And I absolutely just loved seeing Herschel again. I mean, oh my God, my heart just broke because, you know, they filmed it perfectly, even though they didn't know that, you know, this would be the the last we would ever see of him. And they absolutely filmed it perfectly. It was just absolutely a wonderful tribute to the character and also for the show. I loved the Maggie and Negan ending. I mean, it's, you know, spoiler alert, it's what happened in the comic books. So they took it from there, which is fine. So I kind of saw it coming. I'm glad that that's what they went with, because I think it suits the character of Maggie well, so that she didn't have to go down that path of basically murdering Negan. I loved how the conversation between her and Michonne went, two very strong women with their opinions, but Michonne finally understanding that if she wants her, you know, basically her best friend to have closure on this situation and for them to be able to move forward in the society that they're building, that, you know, letting Maggie sort of confront her demon and doing what she needs to do, just watching her hand over those keys. Oh my God. It was just so amazing. And then what happened with, Negan and Maggie, I mean, you know, I don't trust Negan. I always feel like, you know, he's trying to pull a fast one. So for the whole scene, you know, I'm watching him, listening to him, and he's basically just pouring his heart out and crying and wishing he would die. And the further along the scene, I was just waiting for him to sort of flip it over that he was faking it, but I don't think he was faking it. I think they truly broke him, which is amazing because, you know, that's a character you don't think could break. And they basically just took him out of the spotlight, and he's this broken, sad old man in, you know, a jail cell now that is really no good to anybody. So I love that Maggie sort of saw it within herself that she could accept the fact that the Negan she wanted to kill, the one that she wanted to die, was no longer there. This is a different Negan who is basically suffering, and that him suffering would help to give her closure. So I'm okay with that. I loved that. I loved seeing Michonne at the end, when the bridge had blown up, and just the passion and the horror and the sadness and just the drama of her straining to run and help, Rick, you know, save him, just, and everybody trying to hold her back. Oh my God. That, I mean, through the whole episode, I was like, yeah, man, I'm not going to cry. This is fine. I could see all this coming. Everything's fine. But then just the look and the scream and the sound of her crying, that brought a tear to my eye. That was just great. This episode was just amazing. I loved the Anne ending. I didn't see that coming at all. I was kind of like, oh God, they're just going to put her on that helicopter. She's going to fly away. We'll never see her again. Whatever. It's no big deal. But then, you know, she saw Rick on the banks of the river, and he's half dead. And then she's negotiating for her freedom or escape or whatever. And that's how that they wanted to end her story and his, or I guess begin their story, because now wherever Rick lands in these movies and miniseries that they're talking about, Anne is going to be with him, which is great. So, you know, I mean, I totally get why they're sort of pulling him out of, you know, the Atlanta area or whatever, or the DC area where they're supposed to be. You know, that's great. You know, as an actor, he's been, you know, living in the States for the majority of the past 8 or 9 or 10 years or whatever it's been. I can totally understand why he's going to want to spend some extra time at home. So now I'm thinking maybe the next, you know, things that he gets to do closer to home, which is great for him. And I'm happy for him. And I'm very excited about where the future of where this universe is going, and I hope Gimple doesn't gimple it up and, you know, ruin everything going forward. I hope he's learned his lessons. I hope he's taking cues from Angela Kang, who is just absolutely doing a phenomenal job at the program this year. And I also loved, finally, this very long message, the time jump at the end. I'm so excited. At the end, I was like, okay, who are these people? What's going on? They're fighting. Okay, these are the new people. We were expecting them. No problem. And then Judith rides in and rescues them. And she's like the most badass character. Oh my God. I'm very excited. Very, very excited about where this show is going. I cannot wait. I'm loving it. I mean, I honestly thought that the show was pretty much on its last legs, but I really think that they are setting themselves up for many more seasons to go. I think we will see their ratings start to increase again as people sort of get back on board. I think they're doing a great job, and I absolutely loved it. We're only on episode 5. I mean, oh my God, episode 5. So great. I can't wait for the rest of this half of the season. Can't wait for the back end of the season to see what they're going to do with the Whispers. Everything's just great. Everything's great. Great, great, great. Okay, that's it. Thanks, guys. Thanks for doing such a great job in this podcast. I love it. Sorry for the long message, but I had so much to say, way more than I could feel like I could type out and make any kind of sense. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Wow.
Thank you so much, Tilly. And clearly, you can unseat Steve. It's the showcase of winner. So thank you for such a long but good baseball. So
yeah, but Steve's here.
I know. And I already gave him one, so I love that Negan was broken. And I, like Tilly said, how she could accept the fact that he was broken and that he'd be suffering, that was enough to make her relent. The thing that I really wonder if the writers had intended this to be the last episode of Lauren Cohan at the time when they wrote it.
I don't think so.
I wonder, for all we know, this may have been written sort of ahead of time. This may have been like Angela Kang may have been writing to this story that Gimple had already written.
I really hope we get a Maggie closure episode.
Yeah.
We get a flashback. Show us something of why she leaves, what, you know, even if it's just one scene of her taking Herschel and saying, I'm going to whatever, the Commonwealth, yeah, or the Georgie, or I'm heading out. It's because we need that. I think we need that, and the actress deserves that.
So. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I would say that they need to explain it in a way that, like, what I fear is this next episode is going to be 40 minutes of exposition, you know?
Yeah.
And explaining to everyone what's happened over the last 6 years. And mm-hmm. probably a good chunk of that will be, you know, gee, we searched for Rick's body for all this time and never found it. And, oh, Maggie was, you know, distraught and she went to the Commonwealth or what. Like, it's, some people didn't like the first episode because it was a lot of, and I could see this as being right. It was, I think you had even mentioned it, Steve.
A lot of dialogue.
A lot of like, oh, let's go visit this character for 30 seconds. And there'll be a lot of, hey, you know, what you been up to the last 6 years? Oh, okay. Well, see you later.
it's a lot of telling instead of showing.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I tend to think that we're going to see that. But for the most part, I loved this episode. Even if he had ended up dying, I probably could have accepted it. But, you know, I loved, like you did, you know, Steve, I was thinking when she was talking about it, it's like, this is Steve's favorite character now.
It was funny because I put that in one of the Facebook groups where I made that statement, and
yeah,
got a few people to jump on it, that with one line of dialogue, we have everybody's newest favorite character in the universe is Judith, with three words, not even a whole line, just yes, three words, you know?
Yeah. She is the sister of Carl in spirit as well as age, you know, when he started, but also she's everything that he was except the eye patch.
But
she's got to get that eye patch.
But does she know how to catch frogs?
Well, depending on who her daddy was.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to bring that up.
Frogs, get some frogs, get them.
That was the throwback, people.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's. I'm excited to see it. If you saw the preview that the Talking Dead showed of the next episode, I'm excited to see what this little girl is able to do with this character and what the writers are going to do.
Looking earlier to see if there was a Talking Dead this week, and I didn't find one. Sometimes they release those a day or so late, but I did not find a Talking Dead. I was curious to see if they had, you know, talked about anything else. One thing I will say, there is a separate interview on the AMC app. I don't know if you need Premiere for it, but there is a separate interview if you do have Premiere. And Steve, you have Premiere, it seems, so you probably saw this as well. There's like a separate interview with Andrew Lincoln that is different from the one that was done with the vet Nicole Brown. In fact, there's a bunch of outtakes of this other interview. It's really funny. Really funny.
Yeah, I'll have to look for it and see if I've I know, because I watch it on cable, so I may be able to get some of that stuff through the app using my cable login.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Or search YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe
that gets leaked.
Well, anyway, thank you, Tilly, for that. Next, Steve.
Yeah. So this is from Todd, and he says, holy freaking time jump, Batman. Oh, the feels. Kind of loving this one. I almost wonder if the whole time Negan was trying to be a butt munch because he was wanting to die since he lost his wife. I mean, the whole time he was Negan during All Out War and before. I think my favorite flashback was with Shane because they were able to bond and have the relationship they never got. How's my girl? LOL. Such an a-hole. Winky face, smiley, not the emoji. At least the door is open for Rick to come back. I still want to know what qualifies an A or a B and where this place is and who are these people Anne is bringing Rick. Is it too early to put my vote in for Norman Reedus as the Marvel Netflix version of Hawkeye? And I agree. I loved the it's possible, I guess, that the entire time he was being Negan, he was just trying to die. That would explain the strutting around on the catwalk in front of, you know, 20 people with machine guns. It would explain all of the times that he put himself into harm's way, but always kept seeming to get out of it. You know, maybe Negan's been trying to die the whole time and just didn't happen. I don't know. Interesting point.
I wonder if it's possible that there are things more than just A or B, like are there C's and D's too? But it seems that they don't want those. Like, I don't, you know, I guess based on, see, that was, I was going back to last episode where Anne said to Gabriel, you know, all this time I thought you were a B, and then she knocks him out or whatever. And
so I'll jump down to give my feedback on this a little bit early, because I think my theory will help explain my theory.
Alpha or beta?
Yeah. My theory on the A and B is an A is a strong-willed person who gets bitten by a Zed.
Okay.
And a B is either a weak-willed person or an injured person who is either bitten or not bitten. So like they're, I think whatever this place is they want to see how long a strong-willed person can survive a bite, or how long an injured person after they die becomes a Zed. If they're, or like how, or like if a weak-willed, how, if there's a difference between a strong-willed and a weak-willed person. That's what I'm starting to think now. Okay. Because she originally called Rick an A, and she was trying to get that walker to bite him, but he got out of it. She called Negan an A when she was trying to get that walker to bite him. And then she called Gabriel an A when she didn't let the walker bite him. But then when she sees Rick on the bank of the river, she says, I have a B, but he's strong. And
meaning that, you know, he was a beta, but was not bit.
Right. Like, so maybe he's a B. He's just injured. He's really badly injured, but he is a strong-willed person. So maybe he can be either one. So that's, I think.
Somebody who is actually something that they could use for whatever they have in their community.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Maybe that's what it is too. Maybe an A is, I don't know. Maybe somebody, an A is someone who can contribute, and a B is someone who's just going to have to be taken care of.
Exactly. All right, cool. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's not that I'm convinced with or not convinced. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure.
Oh, I'm sure that my theory is not completely fleshed out and correct. Like, I'm sure there's way more into it than the simplistic way that I just laid it out. I'm sure there's way more involved in it.
All right.
Well, Cutter actually responded to that saying, he's a B, reacting to Todd's comment. I almost wonder if the whole time Negan was trying to be a butt munch because he was wanting to die since he lost his wife. My thoughts are pretty much in the reaction. I think Negan was just using reverse psychology with Maggie and to get what he wants, to be killed. That was his aim. since he has nothing to get live for anymore, hence the taunting and description of Kellen Glenn. But it kind of segues to what you were saying, Steve, about, you know, A's and B's, and it might result in that answer for the fact that, yeah, I think that, you know, originally she thought Rick was an A, and now he's a B because he's wounded. And, you know, last night I stopped the show. He says, last night I stopped the show and said the exact same thing to my wife, that he's been trying all this time to find someone bigger and better to come along and do what he can to kill him. Which is, I'm starting to think that that's more like Negan from what Cutter was saying.
That's what he's describing. He's thinking that Negan was reacting that way to Maggie because basically trying to act all badass just to have someone come along and kill him. But my response to what he said there was, I said, if that were true, he would have just let Simon kill him. And Cutter responded to me. He says, oh, I don't think he'd let anyone just kill him, at least not before prison. They had to be worthy and they had to earn it. Dying at Rick's hands, or Maggie's for that matter, he'd have been fine with that. In his own twisted way, they had his respect, worthy opponents. In his eyes, Simon wasn't worthy. And I responded with Wayne's World, we're not worthy. We're not worthy. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's possible. I just tend to think that they broke Negan's back, so to speak. And
yeah,
keeping him alive is making him suffer. And if you kill him, you give him release. And do you really want to give him release, or do you want to just make him suffer for as long as possible? That's my take. Anyway, I guess I'll take this next part too. We got all screwed up in here, but Corey is next. He says, teared up as they focused on Daryl's reaction to Rick blowing the bridge. But now I'm totally confused about this lost moment of Rick being flown to rescue. Is this world some sort of Truman Show situation?
Okay.
Maybe. And I wonder if, now I know Corey is in Australia, so I wonder if he gets Talking Dead. He may not have heard the rest of it. And, you know, we've kind of been beating around the bush, but, you know, there's going to be more of Rick Grimes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe Corey knew about that. Maybe he didn't. He probably knows about it now. I don't know. But yeah, I tend to think I have this in my notes somewhere. I wonder if Rick's going to end up in Europe. Mm. You know, and that'll allow the person who plays Rick Grimes to be with his family while they shoot in, you know, the UK somewhere, and it'll be just like 28 days later.
Nah, I don't think so. I think he'll wind up in Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
I don't know. I don't have a theory about it.
Listeners, skip ahead.
Oh, here we go again.
In the comic book, they actually go to Chicago. Okay. And apparently they meet somebody who is very eccentric, very plucky. And me and Mr. Blog actually spoke about this on his talk about the comic book over a year ago. And I think they're eventually going to lead into Chicago in some way, and that's where they eventually meet up with Rick, or they have an encounter with Rick in some way.
I mean, do you really think that that's what they're going to do? Like, because it seems to me they're doing a lot to try to divorce themselves from the comic book.
If they do, that would be great and be awesome, because it would be a complete own entity to itself. But the thing is that they're still keeping
the Whispers.
the whispers and everything else, and probably the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on. And though I do enjoy and I love the comics, they're trying to incorporate that in some way. But they do actually have some sort of interaction with Rick Grimes, with the Commonwealth. And the Commonwealth is...
The problem I have with everything you're saying right now is that Gimple was very clear to say Rick Grimes is no longer going to be on The Walking Dead, the TV show, that they're going to bring him into some other aspect, some other miniseries or movies or whatever. So everything that we start talking about the show proper, we have to remember. Now, I'm not saying Gimple's telling the truth, and I'm not saying that things can't change.
Yeah.
But they've made it clear that they are separating themselves from Rick Grimes. So we don't necessarily need to have now, of course, they can get other characters to pick up those storylines from the comic books. But
oh, very true.
I just think we need to start realizing that if this show is going to go further than season 10, which I guess it's been picked up for season 10, if it's going to go further than season 10, it's probably going to be without Rick Grimes. So
has it officially been renewed?
I thought I had heard that because they're talking about Andrew Lincoln directing an episode in season 10.
So I mean, it's going to be renewed. It's just a question of, you know,
when.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it has to do with, they usually don't announce it unless they have all the contracts in place, who's going to run it and all that stuff.
Maybe they haven't officially announced it, but I mean, everybody's talking about season 10.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's clearly there's going to be a season 10. So,
well, Glynis has some feedback here quite a bit. She said Maggie's confrontation with Negan, it dawned on Maggie that Negan is just a shell of his former self, and killing him would put him out of his misery. So it's extra torture for Negan to survive and deal with his demons. It's nice that Maggie and Michonne had that moment of understanding, fleeting though it was, but they were called away by Scott.
M. Gimple.
Yeah, no. When the black guy that came and told them there was something going on at the camp, when Maggie had,
that seems to be his role this season. By the way,
just telling
you, notice that the only time he ends up showing up is when he has something to say to either Rick or Michonne. He's like the messenger.
When Maggie had stopped at that small bridge, I wonder if the bridges are also equating to meeting people halfway with their respective differing opinions. That small bridge also made me think of those fairy tales where there is a troll under the bridge preventing passage across, but this time it was a walker troll to dispense with. I think the A versus B type is that the A type is useless and doesn't offer anything to society. Hence, the A type is subjected by Jadis to death by walker. Type B are strong and useful to society. Hence, they get to live. That seems reversed to me. Jadis / Anne grappling between her two personas was very well acted. I guess she'll be part of the Rick Grimes movie trilogy. Rick kept saying that he had lost his family. Not sure if that was a reference or callback and referring to Morgan's mantra of I lose people and then I lose myself. Looking forward to the next few episodes. It looks like it's going to be a wild TWD ride. I will be half expecting Rick Grimes to turn up for cameos in TWD still. I know they or Scott Gimple said Andrew Lincoln is done with the TWD series itself, but Robert Kirkman said that about crossovers between TWD and Fear the Walking Dead, and look how that turned out. I guess she's got a point on that. So onward to Rick Grimes movie trilogies. Can't wait. I see the first one is slated to start production in 2019, drumming the fingers on the desk so long to wait.
Because, you know, remember that Apple would never make a phone.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they would never make an audio player, you know.
Yeah, so but, I guess I probably speak too soon to say he won't show up again. So
yeah.
Cheryl says, so in the previews for the next 3 weeks you hear the walkers talking, whispers I believe, and they think they are evolving. Does that happen in the comics? Well, they do hear whispers and they find out what they are, and I'm not going to give anything away because we pretty much know the answer is there. What do we know about this? Pretty much that, yes, we're going to see something. Everything's already been out there on social media and on the internet, and we know that the whisperers are there, and we're going to see their presence probably in the second half.
Well, I wonder, Mark, if there's a couple of ways you can interpret this question. Is she asking, did they evolve, or did they think that they evolved, or did the whispers talk? And what she might be asking here is, did our group think that the walkers were evolving? And then, of course, they find out later that that's not the case.
These things do come up, and in the initial comic, they actually thought they were talking, and then the truth was unfolded. I'm not going to go into that, so that's your answer. I'm not going to go any further because I don't really want to spoil anybody.
Okay. She did say one other thing, though.
Also, did no one else hear the chopper, or was this farther down the river? Apparently, nobody heard the chopper.
Except for...
Get to the chopper!
Yeah, we already talked about this. So
Arnold heard it.
All right. Next, just to keep things going, Laura has a little bit more. She says, I've been loving this season so far much more than I have the past few. So I'm hoping that Angela Kang lets Scott Gimple have his last hurrah with Rick, and that we'll get back to her vision of where the story is going. Well, I don't think he's had his last hurrah because he's going to take him to this new thing. But anyway, I got totally psyched seeing Judith in the time jump, and the preview for the remaining three episodes has truly gotten me excited for The Walking Dead again. Awesome. All right.
So we already talked about most of what I have there. I told Mark this earlier, and I'll just say this very quickly. I'm glad they're finally doing what I've been wanting them to do for the last three seasons, which is change things up.
Yeah.
And I just wish they could have done it without a time jump and killing off characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, is there anything that hasn't been mentioned that you were going to bring up?
Well, Talking Dead, we already talked about a little bit about the speculation of AMC with doing more with their app and everything else that's going on. We're, you know, getting a trilogy of movies with Rick Grimes. We didn't get a death, but the show will go on. Plus, there will be no real spoilers with the comics now, since it is out of time sequence of the comic book. Huh. So there's no way of speculating or figuring out what's going on with the actual show or how it's going to progress. It's all in the hands of the writers at this point.
Right.
This is a new beginning at this point with the show.
All right. Do you think that Judith will now have that relationship Carl had with Negan?
I think so.
You changed your mind because you had something else in the notes, Mark.
I really think that that's what's going to happen. I had a change of mind.
Yeah.
I had a change of thought.
Well, originally you thought it might be somebody else.
I thought it would have been Henry.
Yeah.
But I think from what I've saw in certain previews that Judith over time will have this relationship with Negan. And Henry will just be somebody that may be paired off with somebody else.
It's going to be interesting to see. Now, I've not read the comic book, so I don't have any clue what the relationship is. But I think it's still going to be interesting to see where Negan is 6 years later. Because we see him broken and, you know, and this suicidal but not able to kill himself. And now 6 years later, where is he? He's obviously still in the cell from what the previews show us. So he's still alive. Where is he at psychologically now is going to be the big question. And I know everybody's asking about that. What is that about that relationship? Because there's that whole thing with Carl and Negan in the comic books, but we also don't know what's been going on for the 6 years. So
yeah. Yeah, and on top of that, you know, they're going to mix things up. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got the Carl Negan comic book story of how they were able to interact and it being with Judith now. And then Henry's character goes on with somebody else that of a story that we haven't seen yet.
The one thing that hasn't been mentioned, I don't think, is the don't open dead inside doors. That I noticed it was a nice little detail that when we see it in the hallucination, it says it has don't crossed out And it's not inside, it's outside. So it says open, dead outside.
Yes.
So I thought that was kind of cool. All right. Well, that's it. We've talked about this episode rightly so, I think, but to death. Let's move on to news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Well, as predicted, ratings were up. Although they weren't up as much as you might think, Walking Dead got a 2.07 in the 18 to 49, which is good because it meant that is back in the twos, with 5.414 million viewers. So that's up from last week's 1.95 and 5.095 million viewers. So it's a especially in the number of viewers, that's a good healthy increase, but it's not like a massive amount like you might think for something of, you know, because everyone you think would be coming in to watch the death of Rick Grimes. And certainly if you don't think he's going to die, then his leaving the show, which he is. But Talking Dead seemed to fare better on a percentage wise. Certainly, I think because people wanted to talk about or hear about as much as they could. It got a 1.00. You don't see that happen too often in the 18 to 49 with 2.703 million viewers. That's up from 0.60. So a whole 0.4 of a point, in the 18 to 49 with 1.822 million viewers. So, you know, about almost 900,000, viewers more and, up a good hike. So, if you look in the charts, and those charts are posted on the Facebook group, you'll see that things are still below season one levels on the 18 to 49, but they are up a little bit. The last three episodes are up. So, and the number of viewers is up as well. You can't see it on this document, but it is slightly below what episode 5 of season 1 was. But all right, so we talked a little bit about this, but this is supposedly also the last episode this season for Loan Corhan, and that was mentioned in an article on Hollywood Reporter interviewing Angela Kang. Apparently this is something I didn't realize, but it was actually mentioned on another podcast by Cindy Peterson, actually, that the bridge that they've been using is the same bridge that was used in season 3, episode 10, Home. That's the one where Merle and Daryl rescue the, Hispanic family. That's the same bridge. So, didn't know that. Let's see. We've talked a little bit about this, and, you know, we've been going pretty long, so I don't want to get into this too much. But on Talking Dead, Scott M. Gimple gave the news that Andrew Lincoln will be reprising his role as Rick Grimes. And if you didn't figure that out after hearing this, the rest of the episode, we were probably not paying attention. But supposedly, he will star in a trio of big budget feature length movies that will air on the AMC network. And supposedly, this is the first. Gimple is currently writing the first of those telepics, with production set to begin sometime in 2019. Premiere date and where the movies will be shot are both to be determined. So they could be in Atlanta. They could be, who knows? They could be in London or some other state, for all we know. Supposedly, this trio of movies are the first of multiple scripted ventures that will come from Gimple and AMC as it kicks off its long-term long-term plan to grow this multi-billion dollar franchise. And these will be considered made by AMC Studios, which everything that is The Walking Dead comes out of AMC Studios. They'll probably be on AMC. Could be on AMC Premiere. Could be. They also own Shudder, So it could be, you know, who knows where, maybe they'd even sell some of these to Netflix or what have you. Who knows? And it is a much larger film budget with a film schedule. So in other words, they're not trying to make like an hour of TV in a week like they do now. This, you know, would be like a 2-hour movie with larger budget. So we should, you know, it should look beautiful and it should be shot with a lot of care. So these will be shot much more slowly than what we're used to for The Walking Dead. So, and he hinted at some other stuff. Like he said, characters that are dead and gone, which makes me think they might cover Rise of the Governor. Which is of course the books from J. Bond and Zynga. He mentioned other characters that we don't know. Maybe they would do something with, maybe they'd cover that year that we didn't see on Fear, you know, in a movie. Maybe we would see, maybe we'd finally see the fall of society.
Or here's they Negan. Mentioned,
or here's Negan. Yeah. So there's all sorts of things that are possible. They may all be on AMC. They may be on AMC Premiere. I have some thoughts about AMC Premiere. I tend to think that they're going to roll it out like HBO Now, and you'll be able to get a subscription without having a cable or satellite provider. Because right now you have to have cable or satellite to get AMC Premiere. You can't just like buy AMC. But I wouldn't be surprised if they go that route and you could buy AMC directly. And if they do that, they could do that. They also own Shudder, which is another streaming service. They could put content on Shudder. Who knows? Maybe they'll do like a Walking Dead comedy, much like Star Trek is doing. Maybe they'll do animation. You know, who knows? We did get some feedback from one person. Steve, you want to read that?
Sure. This has comes from Mark, and this is not Mark. This comes from Mark D. So Rick isn't dead, nor is Andy done with the role. He just won't be on TWD anymore. Just when I thought TWD was dying down, they announced that they are starting to produce feature films for TV plus other media content. Is AMC planning on pulling a CBS All Access on us and putting all this extra content behind a paywall? I love the idea of knowing what has been happening in other parts of the world or getting prequels to some characters' stories. I'd love to know how did Negan become Negan or see Sasha and Tyrone's journey before they met up with the group, but I'm not willing to pay extra for them if that's the case. And I agree.
I don't know. It's possible. Like I said, I tend to think that we're going to have something like HBO out of AMC. They will allow you to buy it directly, but HBO, to my knowledge anyway, doesn't offer content that is not available. Like HBO Now and HBO Go, you can't see content there that isn't available on HBO. Now, mind you, they may have a larger library of stuff that has been on the network, but it's stuff that was on the network. I tend to think that that's probably the model that they're going to try to do, but we'll see. If they try to do Netflix or they try to do CBS All Access, that's another thing entirely. I don't know. A couple other things real quick. There was some financial stuff that was announced with this stuff in mind. AMC has announced that they have signed Norman Reedus and Melissa McBride to what sources describe as groundbreaking. It's a 3-year franchise/universe deal. So sources say that the contracts will cover 3 years of the franchise as a whole, meaning if their characters are written off the flagship and relocated to another property in the Walking Dead franchise or depart completely, they would continue to get paid. So in other words, if they die off, they're going to still get paid. So it's like they have a golden parachute. And one final thing is that one reason, if you were wondering why Norman Reedus wasn't on Talking Dead this week, it's because he and partner Diane Kruger have a new baby. So
congratulations.
Yeah. They haven't announced, you know, name or the gender, but, you know, congrats to them.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Mark, why don't you tell people how they can interact with us?
Well, we always want everybody, encourage everybody to follow us up on Twitter. That would be at Walking Dead GSM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. We'd like to encourage everybody to email us at WalkingDeadGSM@gmail.com. The feedback form at the GoldenSpiralMedia.com feedback is now functioning again, so you can send text or audio there. You can find our SpeakPipe widget or call 304-837-2278. The deadline for next episode is Tuesday, November 13th at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. The best way you can support us is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts, goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. While you're there, give us a rating or review. Find out all the other ways to support GSM at goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
And as far as the Star Trek Discovery podcast, the second short track is going to be released later this week. That's titled Calypso. And that's the one with Michael Chabon. And we will be recording something in the next couple of weeks covering the first two shorts, covering the new news about the Lower Decks animated series and Comic-Con trailer from New York Comic-Con. We haven't talked about that yet. So we will get together for probably another roundtable, I think. We haven't officially decided that, but I think so. So, Steve, you're welcome to return if you would like.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And I don't know who's going to take this, but you guys are both from Panels of Pixels. So,
oh my God, you got a double take. You have two of us.
What?
Everybody can listen to Steve and I at the Panels to Pixels, and you can find us on the Next Level Podcast Radio Network.
And I pop up on various podcasts as guests and voicemail submissions.
Yes, and thank you for all you've been contributing to us. It's been greatly appreciated. You've definitely got the podcast bug now, Steve. All right, so the next episode, which will happen 6 years in the future, season 9, episode 6. So 6 years from now, we'll do this. So. Anyway, Who Are You Now? That's written by Eddie Guzelian, directed by Larry Tang. And the description is, the survivors encounter unfamiliar faces outside the safety of their community's walls and must decide whether or not this new group can be trusted.
It's a trap!
All right. Until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm Steve.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, nurse. Man, that was a long one.